from London, BBC Caribbean Report.
Hurricane Jose takes aim at the central and northeastern island chain. Talk of an internal power struggle in the cabinet of Haiti's president, and Caribbean diplomats in Washington study Bill Clinton's foreign aid veto. I am Keith Stonegraves, and this is BBC Caribbean Report.
A hurricane warning is in effect for Dominica, Montserrat, Antigua Barbuda, St. Kitts Nevis, St. Eustatia, Saba.
Forecasters at the Antigua and Barbuda Meteorological Office with the latest advisory on Hurricane Jose, which threatens to bring heavy rain and high winds to parts of the central and northeastern Caribbean. National emergency management organizations on the islands are on full alert as the 10th hurricane of the Atlantic season approaches. In some countries, schools were closed today and government workers were given time off to stock up on supplies and prepare themselves. We'll be finding out how national preparations are progressing in three of the islands, starting in St. Lucia with National Disaster Coordinator Timothy James.
All schools were ordered closed today. All government offices closed this afternoon. All commercial houses also. Supermarkets and business houses that specialize in building materials are still remained open. They will be closing late this evening. For the whole of today, we have been experiencing heavy rains. We have had rainfall island-wide. All disaster committees throughout the island have been meeting all day. There was a special meeting of the cabinet this morning. There was a special meeting of the prime minister with the Ministry of Health. Hospitals are all on standby. The leave for police and fire officers have been cancelled.
In Anguilla, commercial banks and schools are likely to be closed sometime tomorrow. That's according to the island's National Disaster Chief Wycliffe Richardson. He said hotels are making arrangements for their guests to leave the valley tomorrow if they want to do so.
Radio stations have been urged to step up broadcasting of public awareness information relating to hurricanes, including knowing where the hurricane shutters are, and the shelters, storing of valuable equipment, office furniture, securing outdoor items. There's been no brisk shopping reported by store owners today, but according to the chairman of the tourist board here, owners of local airlines are preparing to leave the island. These normally go to Curacao, as well as their ferry boats, which operate between Anguilla and St. Martin. These normally would seek safe anchorage in the pond in neighboring St. Martin.
And the authorities in Montserrat, still recovering from 4 years of volcanic activity, are leaving nothing to chance. Acting Governor Dr. Howard Fergus chaired a meeting in accordance with Montserrat's standing operating procedures. Franklin Michael is the outgoing permanent secretary in the emergency department.
And that meeting looked at the general state of preparedness of lead agencies, received reports, and the impression that was given at that meeting is that in broad terms, our general state of preparedness is good. We have also now put in place the emergency department's action plan, and that is being followed. The Emergency Operations Center will be activated later on tonight. We have increased our public awareness information, and this is a population which we believe generally understands what to expect of a hurricane. And we do have a shelter plan where shelters are already identified. We have shelter management committees consisting essentially of a first aider, a representative from the Royal Montserrat Police Force, and a representative from the district. So each shelter will have a shelter management committee of three, building essentially on the experience from the volcanic crisis.
Franklin Michael. The head of a Haitian human rights group in New York is blaming the increase in violence in Port-au-Prince on what he calls an internal power struggle. Executive director of the National Coalition for Haitian Rights, Johnny McCullough, says the series of attacks on the police is worrying. His observations on the Haitian police are also shared by Amnesty International, who currently has a delegation in Port-au-Prince. Among the most recent attacks were the killing of Jean Lamy, a close friend of the former president Jean-Bertrand Aristide, and the firing of shots on the home of the police superintendent Mario Andrusol. The resignation of the Interior Minister Robert Manuel, who has now gone into exile in Guatemala, according to Mr. McCullough, has also added to the tense climate.
Mr. Manuel was a very close advisor and supporter of the president. And apparently there was a rift between Mr. Preval and Mr. Manuel, which led to Mr. Manuel's dismissal. That is simply a sign of the deep power struggle that is now going on in Haiti between factions that once were of the same mind, but now find themselves without an agenda, without a purpose, and to some extent attacking each other and blaming each other for the ills that have befallen Haiti.
The Haitian police seem to be coming under attack. Is this a sign that the security situation in Haiti is breaking down?
The security situation in Haiti has been going from bad to worse for a while now. It's simply accelerating at this stage. I think the fact that Mr. Manuel was forced out and is no longer in place essentially emboldened a lot of other people who were bent on essentially destroying the leadership of the police or perhaps not trying to undermine it and take it over. So it basically makes them a little bit more aggressive at this stage. So they go on the attack and attack Mr. Andre Saul, who is police chief of Port-au-Prince. And now, obviously, the police leader, the police chief, is forced to always be walking around or driving around with a heavy escort. Now, that doesn't mean that the police itself has not been responsible for a lot of the violence that has plagued Haiti in recent months. To a certain extent, now we have become aware of a number of attacks made on civilians and people who were not in agreement with the policies of the government of Haiti. And that is a chord that strikes at the heart of the human rights situation there.
How much of the violent attacks are linked to the heightened political climate?
Much of it is linked to the heightened political climate. In the context in which you have a rudderless government, you also have a situation in which criminals who are not necessarily politically bent or politically inclined take advantage of the situation and go on the attack, and because it's a free-for-all, lawlessness rules.
Johnny McCullough, Antigua and Barbuda is calling on the United States Congress to provide resources to help the Caribbean with its development. One of the key areas in which regional leaders are seeking urgent help is curbing the transshipment of drugs from South America through the region en route to North America. President Bill Clinton vetoed a $12.7 billion foreign aid bill this week. He'd requested an extra $2 billion. Caribbean diplomats are hoping that some of the money would be channeled into the region. But Republicans in the U.S. Congress want more money to be plowed into domestic spending needs, such as the environment and education. From New York, Bevan Springer reports.
Antigua and Barbuda's ambassador to Washington, Lionel Hurst, says this week's veto is in keeping with the Clinton administration's congressional call for more resources to assist Caribbean nations with their development efforts. The ambassador of the Twin Island Nation says that while America's attention is firmly fixed on supporting Israel and several European nations, mainly NATO allies, there is still time for Clinton to make good on his pledges to the region. Hurst expressed hope that the battle between Clinton and the Republican-controlled Congress will not end in a stalemate, since Congress has a moral responsibility to provide resources to prevent drug traffickers from using Caribbean waters and airspace as transit points for U.S.-bound contraband.
When we provide resources to our police and our regional security system, it means that we must divert resources away from, say, our educational facilities. So we would welcome, for example, foreign aid that would assist us with building more schools or providing more training for teachers or more computers for our classrooms. Since we now have to divert some of those resources to doing a policing job that benefits essentially the United States.
Ambassador Hurst believes that the president is no lame duck leader, and that after making unprecedented promises to regional leaders in Barbados, he still has time to improve his standing with the Caribbean in his final months in office. The reversal of reprehensible immigration laws and implementing the Caribbean Initiative Enhancement Act are two priority areas the ambassador and his team will press the White House on before elections next year. Bevan Springer, in New York City, for BBC Caribbean Report.
The Puerto Rican government has formally opposed the United States presidential inquiry, which recommended that the Navy continue to use a training range on the island of Vieques for 5 more years. Governor Pedro Rosello told a Senate committee that the Navy must stop all live firing exercises on the island. In a moment, we'll be talking to a New York City councilman from the Dominican Republic who's firmly in Puerto Rico's corner on the issue. But first, the BBC's Peter Grester explains why Mr. Rosello finds himself in a tight spot.
He is a close ally of President Clinton's, and he wants to turn his Caribbean island territory into the U.S.'s 51st state. But a presidential inquiry that recommended that the Navy continue to use a Puerto Rican island to train its troops with live ammunition has sparked widespread anti-U.S. feeling on the Caribbean territory. That's why Pedro Rosello formally told the Senate Armed Services Committee on Tuesday that the Navy must not resume its live firing exercises. He told the committee that there was a rare consensus amongst local leaders who all want the Navy out of Vieques, and that its continued presence there could seriously damage relations between Puerto Rico and Washington. The issue came to a head earlier this year when a Navy pilot on a training run missed his target by almost 3 kilometers and killed a civilian guard. That incident prompted President Clinton to appoint the Rush Commission to investigate the Navy's presence on the island. On Monday, the commission recommended that the Navy continue to use Vieques for 5 more years, but that it should use that time to find an alternative site. The Navy's top uniformed officer, Admiral Jay Johnson, said that the Vieques training ground is essential to keeping Navy and Marine Corps forces ready to fight together on land, in the air, and at sea. He said if the Navy does resume its training, though, it will first have to remove a number of protesters camped on the base. The protesters have pledged to stay, and they say that the Navy will have to use force to move them out. It's almost certain to be a very public mass arrest, something the Navy is keen to avoid.
Peter Grester, Councilman Guillermo Linares told me that the Puerto Ricans are right to stand up to Washington on closing the training range on Vieques because of the negative impact it's having on the people there.
The Puerto Rican people are united as they have never been before around this particular issue. Anything that does not come with the request that is being made of removing the military and the presence of the Navy, it's bound to see an escalation in the confrontation that in civil disobedience and in other manner by the people of Puerto Rico.
But Councilman Linares, the governor of Puerto Rico, Pedro Rosello, is a close friend of President Clinton, and he wants Puerto Rico to become America's 51st state. So where does this all leave him now?
The issue of Vieques is beyond any particular formula of with regards to the status of Puerto Rico.
New York City Councilman Guillermo Linares. And finally, the massive fish kills in parts of the region have been described as a wake-up call for the Caribbean to research its own marine environment or pay the price. The warning comes from Dr. Avril Sionchan of the Trinidad office of the Pan-American Health Organization. Dr. Sionchan was one of the marine scientists who attended the weekend meeting in Barbados on the fish kill that occurred from Barbados to Tobago over the last 2 months. From Port of Spain, Tony Fraser reports.
Dr. Sionchan says what the conference reveals was the inadequacy of the present resources to precisely analyze and understand the causes for the fish kills. She said many of the samples done were not done properly or were not taken at the times when the dead fish were found. She says the action plan will reflect that inadequacy.
This regional fish kill, is really a wake-up call that we really don't have systems in place to investigate these kinds of kills that really can have devastating impacts on the economy of the countries, not only in fisheries, but even tourism as well. We need to train our people on how to investigate fish kills, what to look for.
One of the real concerns of the scientists is the immediate impacts that the fish kills have had. In many islands, people stopped eating fish at the height of the kills. St. Vincent reported to the conference that it lost just over $507,000 per month during the kills, that Martinique and the United States had stopped importing its fish, and that there was a 60% drop in the activities of fishermen on the islands. The action plan is to go before CARICOM heads of government when they meet in Port of Spain next week. Tony Fraser reporting from Port of Spain for BBC Caribbean Report.
And before we go, look at our main story once again. Hurricane Jose takes aim at the islands in the Eastern Caribbean. And that's it for BBC Caribbean Report. Join us at 11.05, 11.15 and 12.10 GMT for our next morning programs. I am Keith Stonegrave saying goodbye from London.